conducted worship here, it was 2018. Now it's 2019. I don't know how it is with you, but at the new year I become more aware of the passage of time. Time, that very precious thing. And recently I got to thinking about some of the strange phrases that we use with regard to this precious thing, time. We sometimes speak of killing time. We speak of wasting time. We sometimes hear it said of young people that because of their lack of willingness to study, they're really wasting their time at school or at university. I think of Beau Brummel, the great dandy of the 18th century, who took 4 hours to get dressed and dressed 3 times a day. Which doesn't really leave much time for anything else. What a waste of time. And then there's the phrase, finding time. How often husbands and I, include myself, will say to their wives, oh, I'll do that tomorrow, or I'll do that next week. But, in fact, it doesn't get done tomorrow or next week. Someone said that tomorrow is today's best labour-saving device. and there's some truth in that. We never find time to do things. We've got to make time to do things. And then there's the phrase, I've no time for this. Now, just because we always find time for the things we really want to do, the phrase, I've no time for this, really means I'm not interested in doing this. I can recall several people whom I asked to help with the youth, or with the elderly, or to involve them in worship, they would say to me, I'm sorry, I have no time to do that. Now, what they really meant was, they really weren't interested in doing that. And then there's the phrase of St. Paul, redeeming time. Now, in the new translation, that reads, making the best use of our time. I'm sure you, like me, have wished many people a happy new year and a healthy new year. I sometimes link that with the thought, I wish them a year in which the all-important things don't crowd out the unimportant things, that we should make the best use of our time. They're just phrases, but they're worth thinking about. Wasting time, killing time. I have no time for this. In our world, a world where there is enough food, but not enough compassion, enough knowledge, but not enough love. Father, may we never become so comfortable in our homes that we forget the needs of the homeless and the refugees. May we never so take for granted the freedoms that we enjoy, that we forget those in foreign lands who do not share these freedoms. Father, may we never lose the vision that things could and should be more just, more fair, and more equal in our strife-torn and hate-torn world. Father, may we never lose that vision. Father, encourage each one of us to use our voices, our precious time and energy, to make our community and our world a better and a kinder place to live, and our church a more welcoming and caring place for all who enter these doors. Father, for Christ's sake, we ask it. Amen. Even when the author, Frank Baum, finished the first draft of his story, he had not decided what to call the enchanted land where Dorothy was to seek the help of the wizard. But then one day, his eyes fell on the open drawer of his filing cabinet, the one marked O to Z. And that's it, he thought. Oz. The Wizard of Oz. The Wizard of Oz story is about a young girl caught up in a cyclone and carried away from her home in Kansas to the strange and beautiful land of Oz. With her three unique companions, Dorothy journeys on the yellow brick road to the Emerald City. She journeys there to find the wizard. Her hope and the hope of her companions was that when they reached Oz, their deepest longings would be satisfied. The Scarecrow desperately wanted a brain. The Tin Woodman, he wanted a heart. And the Cowardly Lion wanted courage. That story is, I believe, a wonderful parable about the journey of life. In our sinner moments, I think most of us wish that we were more caring. For deep down, we know that the person who doesn't care has the very worst kind of heart trouble. Others wish they were a lot wiser. Yet others wish they were more courageous and less fearful. The story of Doris's three fellow travellers is, I believe, to a large extent, our story. Let me explain. In the manner of children's stories, some hair-raising things happen on that journey to the Emerald City of Oz. The way these travellers finally get to their destination, the way they get there is important. When confronted with physical danger, it's the cowardly lion who somehow manages to fight his way out. And when thought is required to overcome some problem or obstacle, it's the so-called brainless scarecrow who figures out a way out of the problem. And as for the Tin Woodman, who journeys in search of a heart, he is so moved in that journey by the plight and the suffering of others that his companions have to keep oiling him to prevent his tears rusting at the joints. The climax of the story occurs when they discover that the wizard is far more ordinary than they imagined he would be. Instead of waving a magic wand and satisfying the longings of Dorothy and his unique friends, he points out to them how, to a large extent, all of them now have what they travelled such a distance to try and find. The wizard says to the lion, "You've plenty of courage, for courage is his who in the journey of life acts courageously." Even though at that time he's cold with fear, you have courage. And to the scarecrow he says, "You don't really need more brains. By learning something every day on the journey, you have become very wise." And to the woodman, he says in effect, "A caring heart is one that's willing to be broken." The Wizard of Oz story reinforces much that Jesus taught, that a compassionate outlook is achieved by responding to other people's needs. It's won by caring. And a courageous spirit is achieved by acting courageously. And greater wisdom is achieved by acting in the light of what we already know in our heart of hearts to be true. A man once said to Pascal, the brilliant French scientist and philosopher, the man said to him, "I wish I had your creed, for then I would lead your life." And back came the reply from Pasteur, "Live my kind of life, and you will soon have my clue. It's often easier to act ourselves into a new way of thinking than to think ourselves into a new way of acting. Jesus told people that if they were willing to break down the walls around their own self-centeredness, and with the stones from these walls build bridges into less privileged lives, and if they were willing to stride through the rain to help or forgive a neighbour just because they feel it's what he would have them do, then he said, your lives will be enriched and your faith will be deepened. He said, I am the way, the truth, and the life. Now the order is significant. It's by acting differently, by following Christ's way, the way of sharing and caring and giving and forgiving, that we discover that Jesus is the truth and that life itself is enlarged. It's by following in that way. I think of a young university student who was beset by religious doubts. Though he read countless religious books, he seemed to be getting nowhere. But then one day, one question took shape in his mind. What's the use of trying to get further knowledge so long as I do not yield to what I already know? That there is an eternal difference between right and wrong. That forgiving is better than hating. That sharing is nobler than hoarding. That caring is far better than passing by on the other side. And asking that question was a turning point in Howard Bushnell's life. And he ultimately became one of the outstanding Christians of his day, a man of deep faith, committed to what the church at its finest stands for. It's with the heart rather than the eye that we see rightly. Caring love reveals a treasure house of truths. Truths such as it's by losing our lives in the service of others that we find our lives. That it is more blessed to give than to receive. That people, David Steele, a poem that reminds us how in many spheres of life, small acts can bring about big changes. Let me share the poem with you. One day there was a lad among a hungry bunch who acted rather mad when he offered Christ his lunch. I bet the others thought him daft. I wonder what they said. I suspect they grinned and laughed when he gave up his fish and bread. 5 loaves, 2 fish, 5,000 folk. Now that really is dumb. Will someone tell that crazy bloke each will only get a crumb? But what he had was plenty. Jesus took his fish and bread, and with it not 10 or 20, but 5,000 folks were fed. From this I've come to understand what cannot be denied. A little gift in Jesus' hand is vastly multiplying. Some people believe that it was the example of that wee lad who was willing to share his packed lunch that shamed many others in that vast crowd to share their packed lunches. They argue that few people would go out for the day to hear Jesus preach and not pack something to eat. And perhaps it was that wee lad's generosity that inspired the miracle of generosity in others. Jesus' words, follow me, cut through a maze of theology. To follow literally means to travel the same road. We become more compassionate by showing compassion, not being a spectator of human suffering. The response of the Good Samaritan to the Jew who had been mugged, I'm sure that was not an isolated incident in his life. I cannot help but think that that kind of caring had become second nature to the Samaritan. He just instinctively stopped and offered to help. It's also by forgiving that we become more forgiving. Though there's a certain rough justice in the notion that when people hurt us, we hurt them back. And though getting even can sometimes give us a momentary feeling of elation, revenge and bitterness ultimately cripple us physically and mentally. A profound Arab saying reads, "If you're plotting revenge, you'd better dig two graves, one for your victim and one for yourself." No wonder Jesus wanted us to get the deadly grudge virus out of our systems. No wonder he taught us to pray each day, "Father, forgive us as we forgive." It's also by acting courageously that we become more courageous. During the Second World War, a radio commentator, when announcing the number of German planes that had been shot down, fell into the habit of ending each announcement with the exclamation, "Who's afraid of the German Focke-Wulf?" The nickname of the German Air Force. Well, a pilot of a British plane finally sent the radio announcer a picture of his own crew. And on the back he wrote, "Who's afraid of the Focke-Wulf? We are." The entire crew signed their names. A courageous person is not one who has no fear, but one who's still prepared to act bravely despite his fear. In the most literal sense, to understand means to stand under, to be willing to act upon what we suspect to be true. Doug Hammarskjöld, the former Secretary General of the United Nations, said this: "God asks of me service, not understanding." By travelling the way he felt God wanted him to go, Hammarskjöld reached a far deeper understanding of the Christian faith. In his book, wonderful book, entitled Markings, which is a kind of devotional classic, he says how, and he doesn't quote the scarecrow, but he says, like the scarecrow, live yourself into a profounder way of thinking. Live yourself into a profounder way of thinking. For me, Christianity is first and foremost not a set of theological doctrines, but it's a way of living. The early followers of Jesus were first known not as Christians. They were known for quite some time as simply followers of the way, Christ's way. What a lot they learned by faithfully following, by sharing and caring, by giving and forgiving. That enriched their lives. In so many aspects of life, belief follows experience. Most of us did not begin our courting with an elaborate set of beliefs about the one with whom we'd fallen in love. We thought rather, "I'd like to journey with that person." Convictions about that other person grow out of the companionship, grow out of giving oneself to another. And it's little different with the Christian faith. Recall the change that came about in the life of the greedy, grasping, rich Zacchaeus when Jesus one day befriended him. When Zacchaeus said to Jesus, "Your way of life, I'll try it. The half of my goods I'll give to the poor. And if I've wronged anyone, I will repay him fourfold." And on hearing this, Jesus said to Zacchaeus, "It's a great start, Zacchaeus." I personally am often tempted to speak of myself and others not as Christians, but as becomers, those who are on the way to becoming a Christian. one whose life is becoming a little less self-centered and a little more Christ-like. Some years ago, just before I left Dartmouth, I was interviewed on television by the late Harry Secombe. I was interviewed in Skibo Castle. And I was interviewed concerning the church and humour and the fundraising that I had done over the years for cystic fibrosis research. Before the recording started, before they had completed setting up the cameras and the microphones, Harry Secombe and myself had the great privilege of just sitting and chatting together and laughing together. I remember asking him what was engraved on his lovely signet ring, the one he was wearing. Oh, he said, it's my personal coat of arms and personal motto. And when I then inquired what that was, he said, go on. Immediately adding with a broad smile on his face, you can read it as goon if you like. That's not a bad motto. Go on caring. Go on encouraging others. Go on following when tempted to give up. Go on forgiving. Go on putting principle before profit. Go on putting people before things. Like Dorothy and her companions, the wise men at the end of their adventurous epiphany journey did not find what they expected. On reaching Bethlehem, they found in Bethlehem an ordinary, helpless baby with no halo around his head, and yet a baby destined for kingship. A baby who, when he grew up like the Wizard of Oz, helped many better understand the kind of people they were and wanted to be. In closing, I want to share with you some words written in an article by Albert Schweitzer, the Nobel Peace Prize winner and one of the great saints of the 20th century. Schweitzer says this, open your eyes and seek another human being in need of a little time, a little friendliness, a little company, a little work. Or seek a good cause that needs voluntary workers, and your own humanity will be enriched. How true that is. What wise advice for the year ahead. Let us pray.